Chaim Bloom, the chief baseball officer of the Boston Red Sox. He joins us live right now on the Harbor One hotline. Chaim, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's good to talk to you guys.
Good to talk to you again. I guess you've been pretty busy lately, so we got a bunch of questions to ask you. We did the sports talk debate back and forth. Who made the choice of Alex Cora? Was it Chaim Bloom? Was it the ownership or whatever? You have told us that it was you who ultimately made that decision. You also spent a lot of time interviewing a lot of other candidates. So when was the point when you actually knew that Alex Cora was the guy?
You know, I not until I actually made the decision, which was that was a Thursday. When I made the decision and got our group together, talked to them about it. Recommended it to our owners, and then with their blessing, reached out to Alex. But that was I can't remember the exact date, but it was the Thursday after the election.
Was it even close?
Yeah, for me it was, because I think we had a lot of good candidates to look at. And that's certainly no slight to Alex, because he's tremendous, as you guys know. But, you know, I tried to explain this when we talked about it publicly, that, you know, I think there was this feeling that, you had to assess, obviously, what Alex had done, and if you didn't find it disqualifying, that he was therefore a shoo-in. And that wasn't how I looked at it. I think the important thing, you know, once I had talked to Alex and felt that, you know, it made sense to consider him, that he could be a candidate for this, I think it was really just about, you know, as with any other candidate, looking at all of him, looking at the positives, looking at the negatives, and then, you know, just seeing how that stacked up. Now, obviously, compared to a lot of other candidates that we talked to, he had very different strengths and very different negatives. But at the end of the day, you still need to assess everything that that you think a person is, and what that means for how they might do the job.
Speaking of strengths, so you know you're known as an analytics guy. You know, smart guy, went to an Ivy League school. You know, so much smarter than us stupid jocks over here. But you know, I would assume that matching, you know, you wanted to match yourself up with another guy who pretty much shared your philosophy. So what did you learn about his approach with analytics, and was it in line, and is it in line with yours?
Well, if you guys think I'm smart, you might be in the minority in New England right about now. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'd gotten to know Alex obviously a little bit before he left in January, and knew him by reputation before coming here. He's a brilliant guy and a brilliant baseball mind. I think I'm not sure you're going to find anybody who's going to disagree with that. He has a great eye for the game, and he's really, really smart. I think, I've said it before that all you're really at the end of the day, what you want your manager to do is to lead a group effectively, to be, a good partner in what you're trying to achieve as an organization, and to put your players in a position to succeed and to get the most out of them. And there's a lot of different ways to do that. And I think it's more important probably now than it ever has been in the game, given how creative organizations are getting, to be open to different ways to do that. But the end point is the same. You're just trying to win as many ball games as you can, and hopefully do it for a long time. So, you know, I know that that's how Alex is motivated. And, you know, just hearing him talk about the game and seeing his work over the years, you know, I have appreciated how many different possibilities he is able and willing to look at in terms of putting his team in a position.
So he does agree with you, I guess, is in lockstep with you as far as your approach to building a team and the ways you go about doing that.
Yeah, we had good conversations about that, and he wouldn't be in this job if I and our department didn't think that he would be a partner for us. Now look, there's going to be things that we might do or ask that he may disagree with, and I think that's a healthy part of a relationship. You don't want a yes man. You don't want someone who's going to agree with you on every single thing, nor do we want that in our front office. We're going to get better by challenging each other. I think if we're aligned in our big picture goals and we want the same thing for the organization, then that disagreement is going to be healthy, because we're going to find better ways to achieve those goals.
Chaim, Alex wasn't actually the only guy you guys kind of brought back. And I know that JT Watkins, the video replay coordinator who was suspended through the investigation, you guys brought him back. So why'd you feel comfortable bringing him back in a different role?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And this is another tough question that at the end of the day, you know, from a, you know, I recognize it's kind of a question, you know, about the organization, and ultimately fell on my shoulders to take a stance on what I thought of that after considering everything. Certainly something that, you know, I think JT deserved to be, you know, have his employment taken on its own merits. You know, I think, and you can see a lot of it in the commissioner's report, as much as the commissioner found that he had committed a violation, he also recognized that, you know, the state of where the rules were, you know, the position he was in basically was a very difficult position for someone to be in. And that was something that we factored in. Now we also thought, you know, he's come back in a pro scouting position, and, you know, independent of what the report lays out that he did, you know, he's a good person who treats people well. He's been a great employee, a good teammate, and that's something we factored into. But we did feel it was most appropriate, if he were going to come back, for him to come back in a different role. And that was a role that he also wanted to take on. So he's not going to be in our clubhouse. He's not going to be with our traveling party, but he's going to get a chance to contribute to the organization in a scouting position. And he's got a great feel for the game. You know, I know it's maybe an unanticipated detour for his career, but we're confident that he's going to make us better in that position and add some value to the organization.
All right, we're talking to Chaim Bloom of the Red Sox. Let's move forward. Let's look at the baseball season, because we're all questioning what your goal is here. We've had an offseason where a lot of teams are not picking up options, probably because of economic uncertainty. You have gone into a situation where you have reset the competitive balance tax. Going to be a lot of good players out there. Do you have any spending restrictions from ownership?
We talked about it generally. We're not operating under any kind of a fixed cap. But we also need to be responsible. We need to understand that, you know, what the pandemic has done is not something that we as an organization are immune to. But, you know, the encouraging thing to me, and it really came to light in some of the conversations that I had with ownership throughout the year, is, you know, they have been in this a long time now, and they are in this for the long haul. And, you know, you guys know, because I talk about it all the time, our top line goal, which is to be an organization that on a year-in, year-out basis can compete.
You okay right now? Just a little worried.
Give yourself up.
No, that's outside my window here. That is not coming from me, at least not that I know of. But I know I appreciate the concern.
Yeah.
No. So obviously you can compete for the AL East annually. This division, as good as it is, you're going to be able to compete for a World Series. And that's our goal. And so, you know, things that really have a chance to push us meaningfully towards that goal, they are going to be fully behind. What that means for us in the short term, I don't know yet. We're trying to monitor the market like everybody else is, and figure out what are the best opportunities. Where can we, where can our money do the most good this winter in that market, and make sure that we're addressing our needs accordingly.
So, Chaim, I know there's a new CBA coming, but, you know, a lot of the talk with luxury tax, and especially around here, has been almost this three-year window, right, before resetting. So I guess the question would be, are you ready to jump into that window now, or is this a year where you sort of build that foundation more as far as going over that luxury tax?
Well, you know, and I understand why the luxury tax has been such a topic of conversation around here. I get it. It's been a big deal. I understand why it's a big deal. I think we always need to be focused on that foundation. You cannot take shortcuts to doing this sustainably. If you try to take shortcuts, maybe you'll be able to do it for a year or two, and then you're going to end up back in the cellar. And that's probably true no matter what your resources are. When you see the organizations that are able to do this year in, year out, they're not taking those shortcuts. They are always going to be focused on building that foundation. Now, when you're operating in a market like we are with, when we are, and we will get back there, when we're, you know, we have a full Fenway Park, we have resources that allow us to do some of those big splashy things on top of that foundation. But if you don't have that foundation, it's just not going to work. So that's always going to be a frontline focus of ours, regardless of, I would expect that to be the same in 2, 3, 4 years, just as it is now.
So speaking of that foundation, you know, there's some qualifying players out there who received offers where you have to give up a pick, you have to give up international signing bonus money. But given the economics of baseball, there could be a deal out there that you may not just, even though you don't want to give up those picks, that you can't pass up, right? So it, could that possibly, and I don't want to say any names, but there's a center fielder that's pretty good.
Yeah, no, I think we'd be silly to rule it out. We don't know what how the winter is going to unfold. I also think it's important, given where we are, given where our farm system needs to get, that we're not treating those picks as if they don't have value. And if they do have a lot of value to us, they're really important. You know, they're obviously the quickest way for us to get back to having one of the top farm systems in baseball. So you have to factor it in. But, you know, I think one of the beauty, I generally don't like to take options off the table. I think one of the beauties of being in a market like this one is that, you know, when your organization's running at full capacity, you should not have to take any options off the table. So we won't.
Sorry, we're talking to High and Bloom of the Red Sox. So what type of team are we looking at here next year? We just focusing on pitching. Is it going to be rotation? Is it going to be, you know, bullpen? Or is it going to be a little mixture of both? How do you see this shaping out?
We definitely need to add pitching. I think, you know, that's not news, right? We all saw it this past year. We have room to accommodate quality pitching, whether it's starters or relievers or swingmen or, you know, anything in between. We have room to accommodate those guys. We need to go out and find some more pitching. That's obviously not a secret. So, you know, I think some of that is going to be just dictated by what the opportunities are in the market, whether it's with free agents or in trade. You know, it's exciting now to be looking at, you know, some new faces that joined this team this past year, guys like Houck and Pivetta, and see how they could contribute. But we also don't want to be in a position where we are overly reliant on them. You know, we know at some point during the season, we should expect Chris Sale back. That's going to be a huge lift. But we don't want to be so reliant on that we don't have enough quality pitching to get us to that point. So, you know, I think the answer is really all the above. I think we need to be as strong as we can. Like, I think the strength of our team, you know, right now is that lineup, and I would expect that still to be the case come opening day. But, you know, the bottom line is whether it's by, you know, run scoring or run prevention, it all matters to winning games. We got to be open-minded to different ways to put us in position to win more games. And so wherever that value is, whatever opportunities there are to add talent to the team, we got to be open to it and willing to do it.
There's no doubt that the team that you came from, maybe the best in all of baseball at finding and developing talent, and that's the Tampa Bay Rays. Yet they always seem to have to deal with big market teams when they no longer have economic control of that player because they can't afford to pay them. You are now working for one of those big market teams. Do you think that your old organization would be reluctant to trade with you in any way?
Having been there, I don't think so. I think that's one of the things that I learned over time there is you have to be fearless. If you believe in your process, even if it's something that is risky, even if it's something that might be unpopular, you have to be willing to follow that. And a lot of the things that worked out over time there were not that popular up front, or they were perceived as being, you know, risky out of the chute. And it really just came down to, you know, if you have good people and a good process and you believe in it, you've got a chance to make some gains. Now, you know, sometimes to do that, you have to be willing to take some incoming up front. But if you get scared off by that, or if you get scared off by maybe this will look bad, what will people say, you know, things like that, then you're going to end up missing out on some opportunities. So obviously, there's a lot more eyeballs on our organization, no question. But I think, you know, that's a mindset that I've tried to take here as well.
So Alex Verdugo was a lot of fun to watch last year, but there is, you know, a hole right now. I know Jackie is now a free agent, but more so in left field. Based on what you've seen the last couple of years, how do you count on Andrew Benintendi? Like, what is the situation, him coming into camp? Is he still that guy, or do you sort of look for someone kind of behind him?
I don't feel any differently about his talent. It's just a shame that, you know, his year ended so suddenly because he never got a chance to pull out of that slow start. And what was kind of perplexing about that start was during summer camp, he was swinging the bat really, really well. So that kind of came out of nowhere. I'm sure he would have pulled out of it, but just unfortunately, it was a kind of a freak injury, and it knocked him out for the rest of the year. He's doing fine right now. You know, no concerns about him being ready for spring training. You know, we know, you know, the age he's at, the talent he has, no reason to think he's not going to be productive. Now, with that said, I'd always like to have more depth. I think you want to have it everywhere on the field. So even if you have a lot of faith in someone, you still want to have that insurance policy. You still want to have that depth because the season is just going to wear you down. It always does every year. There's going to be guys that are going to be unavailable for periods of time, hopefully not long periods, but you want to make sure you're ready for that.
We're talking to Chaim Bloomer of the Red Sox. So, I mean, JD Martinez had a rough year, and he also referenced about how hard it was to play during the pandemic and the new rules and regulations. So he struggled in 2020. So based on that, does a guy like JD Martinez, do you just give him a pass for, you know, how poorly he played last year?
You know, it's hard to answer that question because obviously time will tell. I would say that there's never been a better year in baseball to say that somebody should get a pass. It's not to make an excuse for him, but just to say, looking forward, who do we think he is? In a case like this, knowing what 2020 was, knowing how short it was, how difficult it was for certain guys to get prepared, I'm more willing to bet on somebody's track record prior than to put too much weight on 2020. And we're going to find out. And I know, knowing a little more now, being around JD some, about just how much it changed his preparation. Look, we may be under some of the same restrictions in 21. We don't know. So, you know, some of it's on him to figure out ways around that. But I think when you're just looking forward and figuring out, trying to figure out who do we think this guy is as a hitter, I'm going to be a lot more willing to bet on his track record than if he had struggled like that in a normal season.
So a guy like Eduardo Rodriguez, I mean, he was exceptional in 2019. He doesn't play last year. He's going to go to arbitration and I guess probably get a bump for not even playing because the way the process works. But how difficult does it make sitting down trying to talk about an extension? This guy's a year away. Does the missed year just complicate everything?
Yeah, I should say, generally speaking, I don't like to get into details on those possibilities with him or any player, but look, hypothetically, obviously it makes things a little more complicated from that front. I believe, you know, and again, this can be true about anybody. When you have a mutual desire to do something, it gives you a better chance to at least have a good conversation. Sometimes these things line up, sometimes they don't. Sometimes the circumstances, like you said, can just make it tougher. But I do believe, you know, if there's desire, you at least have a chance. Now, again, all these extensions that you see throughout the game are some kind of sharing of risk between a team and a player. And usually in a situation where the player, you know, wants to continue to be where he's at, and everybody's got to make their own decisions on what kind of sharing of risk is appropriate. Just because you don't line up doesn't mean that there wasn't a desire to get it done. It just may change from player to player and situation to situation.
Hi, earlier Christian called you smart, analytical guy, Ivy League school. What you don't realize
super
is
nerd.
Most days he debates and really believes Colorado was a step above the Ivies, but that's a separate
in sports
subject.
It is.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you about Theo Epstein, because you're a young guy in this business. There are a lot of so-called smart guys, analytical guys, Ivy League guys who are flooded through Major League Baseball. And yet I remember when Theo came here, he was the young kid from Brookline, and he had all of that. And you look at him stepping down right now, already through his second team, two championships. Was that a guy that you looked at? And because he kind of turned the corner in analytics, did he not?
Yeah, I think he was one of the more, I was in college when he took the GM job here. And I think, you know, he was one of the more visible symbols of, at least there were pathways in the game to significant impact for, you know, people with backgrounds similar to mine. It's never just one person. I'm sure Theo would tell you that too. There's a lot of different people that have had impact over time, a lot of different ways to have an impact. But, you know, certainly, I think he sort of showed at a time when it was less common that there were, you know, pathways to contribute for people with backgrounds like the one I have.
Yeah, totally different. He's already through two championships, so you get some work to do. We'll let you go and let you get to work, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. Good to catch up with you.
All right, good catching up with you. Chaim Bloom of the Boston Red Sox this hour has been brought to you by Cars for Kids, your number one charity for car donations.